Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
That's right, we are. This is Kansas City Chiefs Superfan Nick, and I am here to guide you through all of the Sunday action. Your usual guy here, Seahawks Justin's taking a little bit of a vacation, so he's a bit indisposed, but he's still checking in with us nonetheless. And before we do anything else, if you're just stumbled upon this show and want to see and hear more, you're going to be hearing a lot more than you'll be seeing, but definitely check us out on blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. That's where you can find all the archives of our show. Also, please do subscribe to us on iTunes and leave a review while you're there. We love to hear from you guys, your feedback, what we could be doing better, how great we are already. But yeah, definitely write and review us because it helps your friends and everybody else find the show. And definitely write to us. We have a few super fan openings. If you want to just simply share your thoughts on your favorite team or the show, definitely just write us at nextfanup@gmail.com. And if you haven't heard from your superfan in quite a while of your team, it means there might be an opening there. We definitely are looking for a Lions superfan, a Titans superfan, and a Buccaneers superfan. So especially if you're any of those guys or gals, go ahead and write us at nextfanup@gmail.com. And again, before we get into the games, there's one more thing is that we got to give a shout out to our awesome sponsor, which is BetDSI. BetDSI is a safe and very reliable place to do your sports gambling, and they have all sorts of ways that you can place a little money on some sports. And it's not just sports. If you like to place some wager on an upcoming election, granted, it's obviously a little late for the presidential one, but a lot of people made a lot of money on BetDSI predicting that upset. They have all sports down to surfing. The guys on the Thursday show like to talk a lot about that. And the important thing is to go on BetDSI and use our promo code FANUP10. That'll give you a great deal with $10 of free play, and it really helps both them and us keep this show going. So, without further ado, into the games. Hello there, I am Nick, your Kansas City Chiefs superfan, as usual, here to break down all of the Sunday games. And we're just going to go ahead and skip ahead to one that actually has a fair amount of playoff implications. That was the Green Bay Packers' absolute beatdown, 38-10, over the Seattle Seahawks in Lambeau. And I am joined by our Green Bay superfan, Brian. So, Brian, you guys were talking about on the battle that you thought that this you know, the Seattle offense was for real, and you weren't sure if the Green Bay defense was going to be able to handle them, but, it didn't quite go like that.
No, it was fantastic. The defense played really well, forced 5 interceptions today, a new high for us, and the offense looked pretty good, too. So, no complaints from my perspective. I wish Justin were here to talk about the Seahawks from his side.
Yeah, we may still yet hear from him later, but he is on vacation, so we're not going to be hearing too much of him today. But just going down some of the, you know, the individual performances here. I mean, you mentioned the interceptions, but you know, beyond that, there really wasn't a whole lot else that stood out. I mean, Aaron Rodgers still played a very good game, a characteristically good Aaron Rodgers game, with 18 completions on 23 attempts, 246 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Although, I mean, in terms of yardage, it wasn't a whole lot. But and also, you know, the Packers still didn't have a great amount of success running the ball. I mean, it wasn't horrible, but I mean, it's just sort of crazy to see such lopsided, such a lopsided outcome on a game where the Packers offensively were, you know, good but not great.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers has been back for a couple of weeks now, and I've said for a couple of weeks that we've really only needed the running game to be good enough. They were good enough today. Rodgers was moving the ball pretty well, converting a lot on third downs. which has been our penchant for the greater part of this year. So overall, it was kind of a just another day at the office for the offense. The defense is the group that I feel like really stepped up today.
Well, and especially now that the Packers have moved themselves up to 7-6, it's going to take some, you know, it's going to be still quite an effort, but the Packers are definitely not out of this thing when it comes to playoffs. How hopeful are you that they can turn this into a postseason run?
Well, I went into this week thinking that whatever the outcome was, that it was going to say a lot about our season, and I'm happy that we won because I feel like that says that we're a team that you should worry about, and the Lions need to win the majority of the last three games here. They play us, they play at New York, and I feel like they play at Dallas as well. I know they play those three teams. I'm not exactly sure of the location of all those games, but either way, it's going to be a tough sled for the Detroit Lions to close out the season. If they make the playoffs, they will have earned it, but I'm confident that the Packers are going to come away with this as another playoff berth for Mike McCarthy and his Green Bay Packers.
Interesting. And are you feeling better about your head coach now?
Yeah, you know what? I felt all along that he's a good but not a great head coach. You know, he's got the Super Bowl credential under his belt, which says a lot about him. And honestly, I've had my fair share of disagreements with the outcomes of the games here with Mike McCarthy as our coach. But all in all, I kind of feel like you'd be hard pressed to find somebody who would be better than him, especially someone who's not already coaching. So I feel pretty good about the state of the Green Bay Packers right now, and I think McCarthy plays a big role in that. So hopefully we can see a continuation of the success that we've had the last 3 weeks and the 3 weeks to come.
And on the Seahawks side, I mean, it's hard to find really any positives in a score like this. But despite the fact that Russell Wilson did have, I mean, just really a surprising meltdown for him with those five interceptions, they were able to move the ball well on the ground. And you know, I'm assuming we saw some other guys step up. What did you see?
A pretty uncharacteristic game by Russell Wilson. He's played pretty mistake-free football for most of this year. I don't know exactly what the Packers did tonight. I'll need to spend some more time with the tape. But I was happy to see that we were able to force all those turnovers that we talked about. A lot of them, it looked like the receivers didn't necessarily make clean plays on the ball. There were a number of plays where it looked like Wilson put it where he needed to put it, and the receiver didn't make the play, and that ended up kind of bouncing up. And for once, the Packers were in position to make plays on those second reaction bobbles by the wide receivers. I think, you know, Justin and I talked a little bit before in our preview just about the state of these two franchises, and I think we're both going to be in a position to compete for meaningful football at the end of this season. Hopefully this win this week means that Seattle needs to come to Green Bay, though.
That would be good stuff. All right. Well, I think the Packers are going to continue to be an interesting story for the rest of the season. I look forward to talking to you about it next week.
All right. Sounds good. Right. Take care, Nick.
You too. We now move to the Detroit Lions and their 20-17 win over the Chicago Bears. I am here with our Bears superfan, Chicago Tom, as usual. And Tom, you know, I think it's another one of those weird Pyrrhic victories for the Bears, in a way, in that you guys seem to have some good performances by young guys at spots where you have a few question marks, and the result of the game was one that did not interfere with you getting a high draft pick.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of Bears fans that would argue that this was the best of both worlds, in that we saw a lot of good things from a lot of good young players. Jordan Howard had another very good good day. The Bears ran the ball pretty well against a pretty tough Lions defense. They had 5.4 yards per carry, and Howard didn't make 100 yards this week, but he had 86. And to my eye, he ran pretty well. He had a pretty good game. Leonard Floyd was getting, along with the entire Bears defense, was getting a lot of pressure on Matthew Stafford. And he looked very good as well. Even Matt Barkley, if you consider him to be part of the Bears' future, looked pretty good today. He's still got that weak arm, and he still sort of lacks that physical stature and ability. But he made some good passes today, showed a little bit of pocket movement that he hasn't shown before. He does have a bad habit of panicking in the pocket when he sees pressure. And he did throw a couple of near interceptions today that didn't materialize, but it's kind of scary to sometimes to watch him work. He's going to have to calm down and stop doing that. But overall, it was a good day for a lot of the young guys. Not to be left out, I should mention Cody Whitehair, the Bears' second-round pick, has been a rock this year at center, and he looked good today as well. The problem that we have here is, and what we saw at the end of the game was really the difference between these two teams. The Lions finished the game. The Bears could not do it. And in the end, they had their chances. They had a couple of really good passes that would have put them in a position to maybe win this game. But two holding penalties on the last drive in the fourth quarter just killed them. And you know, they're going to have to, you know, overcome that. They're a young team. They're going to have to learn to do a better job, you know, in these waning moments of finishing in order to win games like this. And the Lions have shown time after time after time this year that they are very capable of finishing games, and they finished this one as well. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, one more young guy to toss out there is Nick, and I'm probably not going to pronounce this correctly, but Nick Kwiatkowski, your young linebacker, had himself a good game with a sack, another QB hit, and eight tackles.
Yeah, he looked better this game than he did last game. Last game, I thought he didn't look very instinctive. He wasn't attacking the line of scrimmage, but he definitely looked better today. He seemed to be all over in the middle of the field. And had some hard hits on some guys. I mean, there were a lot of guys out there who were laying the wood today. It was a tough divisional matchup with, you know, at least for the Lions, they have the playoffs on the line. And I thought Kwiatkowski really fit in pretty well in that environment. I thought he looked good.
And so from the Lions' perspective, you said that they finished, but it was not without mistakes. Matthew Stafford did throw two interceptions, also had a touchdown. But what did you see out of them, given that they're now a 9-4 team? This is a team that's looking like it's postseason bound. Do you think they have the mustard to, you know, to make some real noise?
Well, no. But let me go over the good part first. I thought the Lions' receivers, they did drop too many passes today, but otherwise they did really well today. The Bears were trying to play man defense across the board, and they did that the entire game. And the Lions receivers, in my opinion, fairly consistently beat them. The Bears defensive backs aren't the greatest in the world or anything like that, but I thought that their receiving core, I thought they surprised me today, and they look surprisingly good. Their issue, and it was their issue last year, and they tried to fix it in the offseason, and they have not fixed it. It is the offensive line. That line looked really bad today. They could not run the ball, and the Bears were constantly pressuring Matthew Stafford. And the only reason there weren't more than three sacks is because Stafford did an amazing job with his feet, getting himself out of trouble. He was moving really well both in the pocket and out of the pocket. And he made it very hard for the Bears to get to him. But otherwise, I thought he was under constant duress today and really had an MVP-type game the way that he performed in spite of that. The Lions' Achilles' heel is going to be their offensive line, and that is going to limit them, and they are probably going nowhere in the playoffs, assuming they make it, and I think they probably will. I don't see that line holding up. That is a real issue with him.
All right. Well, good stuff as always. Thanks a lot, Tom. Talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you.
And next up, we have the Cincinnati Bengals, 25-10 win over the 0-13 Cleveland Browns. This game, you know, went pretty much, it seems, how people would have thought, except that the Browns were bad in interesting and creative ways. If you get a chance, check out the weird outside of their own end zone flea flicker into triple coverage by Robert Griffin III. I think that's definitely going on some of the Browns' greatest hits there. But I am here with our Bengals superfan, Scott. And so, Scott, you know, what's your takeaway from this game?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was what you wanted to see as a Bengals fan. They came out, they got on them early, got up 20-0. You know, after that, it pretty much just controlled the clock. Second half was pretty boring from a Bengals perspective. But, you know, I think it was more so relief from Bengals fans. This is one I think they were concerned about because, you know, when you're going up against the 0-12 team, the pressure's on the opponent to not be the first team to lose. With the familiarity that Hugh Jackson had with the Bengals and his penchant for, you know, kind of some odd setups and formations, I think a lot of Bengals fans were concerned about this game, but they kind of jumped on that pretty quick and put them away early.
Yeah, and I guess it's good to see that you guys can still get everything you want out of the run game, it seems, and Dalton's play seems to improve whenever you're able to do that. Then again, this is just the Cleveland Browns, and they're the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, it's you know, Jeremy Hill got going today, and it's been really odd. You know, throughout the course of his career, he's been, he's been awesome against the Browns, and you know, pedestrian at best against other teams. I know it's the Browns, but you know, it's really odd. You know, the way that he plays so well against the Browns and so poorly against everyone else. But, you know, here we are again. He goes up against the Browns, and, you know, he looks like the Jeremy Hill we saw from his rookie year again. So, you know, it's good for Bengals fans to see that out of him. It's also frustrating to see a guy that can be that good, but he only does it against a team, you know, like the Browns.
And it does seem that you have an emerging weapon in Tyler Boyd. He caught all six of his targets for 49 yards. Also had a nice 39-yard run in there. Are you excited to see what he can do for the rest of the season, or do you think he's probably going to get shoved down the depth chart once A.J. Green's back?
No, absolutely. I think I think one of the things that frustrated Bengals fans with the offense earlier in the season was the lack of role that Tyler Boyd had in the preseason. You know, he had a great preseason, and a lot of Bengals fans were excited to see how they would use him, you know, as that slot receiver. And, you know, as the season began, he didn't find much of a role. I guess the good thing to A.J. Green going down is the fact that it has caused them to run more of the offense through Boyd, and you're seeing him develop. You know, he certainly looks like a weapon out of the slot. Can he be an outside guy? Maybe. I'm not sure about that yet, but he's definitely a good weapon. He runs good routes. He has good hands. He's a smart player, and you can do a lot with him, like you said, with the run. I think he can even pass a little bit. So, you know, he's kind of one of those fun weapons. He'll never be a top receiver, but he can be a very, very good number two or number three receiver.
And on the Browns side, they did have some success with the run. Isaiah Crowell ended up with a nice 10 yards for 113, or 10 carries for 113 yards, rather. RG3 got it going a little bit on the ground. Are you concerned at all about the Bengals' run defense and looking at that, or is it just, do you think that's, you know, or is this actually something that the Browns might be able to build upon here?
Yeah, especially in the second half, the Browns' run offense played very well. It's something that the last couple weeks, the Bengals' defense had been playing very well, but their run defense has always been a bit of a concern. Even through the years when they had a very good defense. So, I think part of it was the fact that they were guarding more to stop the big play in the second half, and therefore it left some more opportunities in the run game. And I think part of it had to do with, you know, just sloppy field conditions that may have benefited the Browns running attack. But, I'm definitely not confident in this run defense, especially going up a Pittsburgh offense next week that saw Le'Veon Bell run for like 872 yards today.
Yeah, and on the defensive side of the ball for the Browns, Jamie Collins seems to be paying off for them. I mean, he ended up with 15 total tackles, 13 solo, and the next guy in terms of that stat category had 5. He also had a sack, 2 tackles for loss, and another hit on the QB. So it appears they have something there. Granted, they had to make a trade to make it happen.
Yeah, he played a very good game. It seemed like every time there was a big play or a big tackle, it was Collins that was in on it. And it'll be interesting to see what the Browns do with him. It's kind of odd that they, you know, a team that's, you know, building with youth would trade for that guy. I don't know if they're going to be able to re-sign him or not, but he's definitely a good player. You know, if they decide to keep him, it's something someone that could build their defense around for sure.
All right, good stuff. Well, thanks a lot, Scott.
You bet. Have a good one.
You too. And next up is the Tennessee Titans and their 13-10 win over the Denver Broncos. And this was a very, very strange game. You had Denver. I mean, we knew that Tennessee has a great running game and that definitely surpasses their passing game, and Denver's been struggling to run the ball. But, man, Denver ends up rushing for 9 times for 18 yards. Meanwhile, Tennessee, in the passing game, Marcus Mariota completed 6 of 20 passes in this game. So this was about as extreme as two different offenses can be. I'm here with our Denver superfan, Lewis, to break it down. So a tough loss, Lewis, but one you said you think Trevor Siemian played very well in.
Yeah, especially coming off the injury. So I wasn't sure how he would play. What's big about Trevor's game is getting him out of the pocket, and when he was able to move around and avoid some of the pass rushers, that's when we were able to make our bigger plays and starting to mount our comeback. But in the first half, we couldn't convert on much of anything. We had a lot of 3-and-outs, which has been a huge problem with our team this year. And yeah, our running game is kind of non-existent. But still a tough one to lose. I thought we had the game. Tough fumble at the end by DJ Derby. And it is on to New England.
No. And in terms of the Tennessee side, you know, obviously they were effective rushing the ball. They had, I mean, but they, it was also a high volume rushing attack. It was 42 carries for 180 yards and a touchdown. Most of that coming from DeMarco Murray. And I mean, are you concerned at all that the Denver was not able to shut that down more, considering how effective they were in the passing game?
Well, I mean, the form of the Denver defense is stopping the run. When you have so many options with DeMarco and Derrick Henry and Marcus Mariota, it's just the mismatch. So it doesn't matter if you are able to stop the pass. The team's just that much more dominant than you running the ball and you stopping the run. There's not really so much they could do. And they're able to get consistently 4 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards, 3 yards. There weren't many two negative runs, but Tennessee executed what they needed to do to get the win, and I guess that's what happened.
And Denver now falls to 8-5. You know, this was probably a team that you guys had penciled in as a win. Are you concerned that this might imperil your playoff hopes?
Yeah, I could realistically see this team not winning another game. It wouldn't really shock me. I could see this team going 2-1 or 3-0. So a lot of 50-50 games, you're just going to have to play a little better and, I don't know, see how other teams do. And it's really all I can really say on that.
Yeah. Well, you have a couple of difficult ones coming up with, as you mentioned, the Patriots and the Chiefs. So it's going to be an interesting, interesting final road here for the end of this the season and the end of this, you know, for the AFC West especially, this division.
Yeah, and Raiders week 17 also.
Right. There you go. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Lewis.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. And next up is the Houston Texans and their 22-17 win over the Indianapolis Colts in what was really a very big matchup for who's going to run away with this AFC South. And I'm joined with our Colts superfan, Dan, here. So, Dan, it was a game where the Colts were very much fighting in this. You had another great game by T.Y. Hilton, but that offensive line just continues to be the Achilles heel of this team. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I think that's the end of the season for Indianapolis. They are now 0-2 against the Texans. I don't know what their division record is, but pretty much have no way of getting through the season. So now it's just hoping that Andrew Luck doesn't have any setbacks for next year. We saw that in a different game, but where their starting quarterback had a setback for next year potentially. But it was a bad game all around. The line from Chuck Pagano this week is if we're treating it like a game seven, and I think they kind of showed that they were treating it like a game seven because those don't exist in the NFL. And the Colts just didn't come play all around, and more drop passes from Dwayne Allen. That's been his thing all year. Pat McAfee had another great punt inside the five that all Indianapolis had to do was down it, and they end up batting it into the end zone. So same mistakes we've seen all year long. Put up in a game that they needed to win.
And in terms of Andrew Luck, I mean, you mentioned the drops, but he finished 24 of 45 for 276 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions. He was actually just sacked once, but did get hit 13 times. How much of those interceptions and some of those things were on him, and how much is it the cast around him?
The first interception, Dwayne Allen fell as Andrew Luck's getting ready to throw it. So assuming Dwayne Allen had normal human feet and didn't fall, I think that his hands on it, whether he catches it or not, it's another story. The second one that he threw, no one was open, so he started to feel some pressure. And, you know, when you get hit that many times, you're going to try to make plays. And that's what I think he was trying to do there, but still threw a pretty bad interception. And then he also had a fumble inside the five-yard line. It was third and three, or third and goal from the three, and backfield to knock the ball loose. And so you had another turnover there. And in these games, you can't afford to take those, can't afford to make those turnovers. So I don't know. I put the second interception and even the fumble, I guess, on Luck. But, you know, with the offensive line playing poorly all year, I think they lost Muir again in this game. That's the second time they've lost him. And he's the one steady piece that they've had this year on the offensive line. So losing him really hurt.
And from your perspective on the Texans, having now played them twice, you know, it was another lackluster game for Brock Osweiler, who finished with 14 of 24 for 147, no touchdowns and an interception. But Lamar Miller had a great game with 21 carries for 107 and a touchdown. Do you think this is a team that's going to have some staying power, or are they just, sort of been propped up by a weak division?
Yeah, they're garbage. The division's garbage. I think Lamar Miller got the majority of his stats on maybe one and a half drives where they just decided to eat some clock when they had the lead early in the second half. I think seven of their first nine plays in the second half were running plays. And he had a nice 20-yard run in there that I guess made his stat line look better, but he was off to a slow start. Alfred Blue came in early and often, so you kind of knew what they were going to do in this game. They were just going to run the ball at Indy and make Indy prove they could stop them, and they couldn't do that. I don't know. There wasn't much – I don't think there was much optimism, I guess, for Texans fans. And if you guys have been listening to James this year, I'm sure that you feel that lack of optimism around them as well.
Yeah. So now at 6-7, what are you looking for in this team in these last three games for the Colts?
Yeah, I guess look into the draft already. See what guys take this as a opportunity to have a tryout for next year on the defensive side of the ball. I don't know. I'm one of the few people out there, I think, that have respected the way their defensive lines played this year, especially the young guys. So I think that if those guys can continue to develop and progress, they might secure a roster spot for next year. The big sore spots are linebackers, though. I mean, you have Trent Cole. He plays the pass rusher. You had Eric Walden playing the weak side. Those guys are going to get replaced next year, but I don't know if they have anybody on the roster that they're going to even try to put in those positions the last couple of weeks. It'd be nice if we could move someone up and see what they have. Inside linebacker, you got guys like Morrison and the other Jackson in there. So I'm going to be watching those guys just to see if they bring anything for the future and then see what T.Y. can do. He's having a pretty good year statistically. I think coming into the week, he was second in yards. So if he can maintain that pace, it'd be kind of a fun stat to eye on. But, you know, it's the season's over at this point, I think.
All right. Well, I do hope some of those guys start stepping up for you and gives you something to watch as we move forward and close out this season. But thanks a lot for joining, and talk to you next week.
All right. See you.
And next, we move to the Miami Dolphins' 26-23 win over the Cardinals in Miami. But despite eking out a win here and really helping their playoff chances, now up to 8-5, the real takeaway and the real sort of lasting legacy of this game may be that Ryan Tannehill went down with a knee injury, and it is believed to be a torn ACL. I am here with our Dolphins superfan, Andy. So, Andy, how do you feel about this game, the injuries? It was a crazy one.
Crazy. You know, and something that we discussed just now off air was that, excuse me, one of the reasons that the NFL is king is because games are a football game. The ebb and flow of a football game is typically going to be an emotional roller coaster. And when your inventory is only 16, as opposed to 162 like in baseball, or as opposed to 81, 82 like in football or like in hockey and basketball, when your sample size is only 16, each game is life and death, which means each possession, you only get around 12 of them, is life and death. And this football game, between us getting out to a lead and them coming back, blocking an extra point for a two-point conversion, the turnovers, I mean, there were 5 turnovers in this football game in the first 10 minutes. That's how sloppy the weather conditions were. Crazy, crazy game. And then on top of that, the Tannehill injury. And, you know, anyone who follows me on Twitter knows that I've been called a Tannehater. Let's just put it that way. I don't think he's a franchise quarterback. But it's one of those things where you don't know what you have until you lose it. And the fact that he went down and likely tore up his knee, we're probably not going to see him again until week one next year. That's rough. That's really rough, because he is a better – as I said earlier, you can do a lot worse than Matt Moore as far as backup quarterbacks are concerned, but there's a reason that Tannehill's the starter and Matt Moore's the backup, and it's just rough. It's rough seeing a guy, you know, go down like that in a game where he was playing well. Really tough. Were you able to see any of this game?
I just saw a few bits and pieces, including, that one really that pass that got away from him and ended up looking like a blooper, so I didn't see his better throws of the day.
Yeah, I mean, he played well. He played one of his cleanest games of the year. The interception that he threw wasn't, not to say that it wasn't his fault, it was, but it was one of those things where, you know, the corner and the receiver, in this case it was Kenny Stills, they basically had simultaneous possession, kind of wrestling with it. It could have just as easily been an 18-yard pass play, as easily as it could have been an interception. Wasn't a bad throw by any means. Tannehill played incredibly well against what is legitimately a good Cardinal defense. And on the other side, I think the main takeaway from Arizona's point of view, Carson Palmer shot. He threw 2 interceptions today. Could have been more. I mean, that ball, it seemed every other incomplete pass he threw was a pass that a Dolphin defender tipped up in the air before it fell harmlessly to the turf. He could have thrown 5 or 6 picks, and I'm not exaggerating that number either. There was also some botched center quarterback exchanges. I mean, the conditions, it was a monsoon out there. The conditions were so sloppy. Both teams turned the ball over a ton. And looking, going forward for this Dolphin team, we're going to beat the Jets in MetLife next Saturday night. It's going to be a primetime game. Matt Moore's more than good enough to beat the Jets. The Jets are currently, I think, losing to the Niners pretty badly.
Yeah.
Or last I checked, they were. You know, so we're probably going to go to 9-5. And, yeah, listen, Tennessee beating Denver today certainly helped us out. And if I'm not mistaken, I do believe that if the playoffs started at this moment right now, we would be in, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. But with Matt Moore as your quarterback, do you think this is a Dolphins team that could get a win or two or three in the playoffs?
I mean, it would depend for sure on how the seeding. First of all, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We might not make the playoffs. I mean, there exists a very real scenario where the Dolphins finish 10-6 and miss the playoffs. It is even possible, believe it or not, it is even possible to finish 11-5 and not make the playoffs. That's even possible too. So let's not get ahead of ourselves as far as the playoffs are concerned. Now, having said that, say we go 10-6 and do make it, it would obviously depend on how the seedings shake out. I mean, listen, we're gonna get in as the six if we get in at all, which means we'll have a road game at the three. Who's gonna be the three? Looks like it could be Pittsburgh. Looks like it could, well, the winner of the South is gonna almost assuredly be the four. So it's probably gonna be either Pittsburgh or Baltimore. Listen, we've beaten the Steelers earlier this year. That was the first one of our 6-game win streak. We got smacked by the Ravens. Honestly, I don't like our chances in either of those buildings, even if we had Tannehill. We're not going to have him. Yeah, we're probably going to be one and done if we make it, but I mean, either way, this season's going to be widely considered to be a success if it even gets to that point. And I wouldn't really be that shook up about it if we lost if we lost in the wild card round, 23-17 to a superior Pittsburgh or a superior Baltimore team.
And on the Cardinals side, I mean, as you mentioned, we it appears we've seen the decline of Carson Palmer, but in his place, David Johnson has just been ridiculous this year. And there's been at least some conversation in our Slack about whether or not David Johnson really should be possibly in the catbird seat, or at least definitely in the MVP discussion. What are your thoughts on him and whether or not he should be considered?
He won't be, just because that's not how football writers operate. Very much like the Heisman Trophy. You're not going to win the Heisman if you play for a 7-5 team. You're just not. Not saying that's how it should be, and I think that's asinine to think that way. And it's a very 20th century way of thinking about voting for these awards. But for better or for worse, that's how football writers still in 2016 think. So because the Cardinals are going to finish below 500, Dave Johnson doesn't have a chance. But let me just tell you, he is that entire offense. I mean, it's little jerk routes and slants to Fitzgerald mixed in here and there, but for the most part, it's the David Johnson show. I mean, they like him so much as a pass catcher. There were a couple instances in this game where he would rip off like a 5 or 6 yard run on first down. So on 2nd and 4, they'd motion him out of the backfield, line him up on the boundary against Byron Maxwell, who, say what you want to say about Byron Maxwell, he's an above average NFL corner. He's not bad like he looked last year in Philly. And he would be running routes on Byron Maxwell. That's how gifted a pass catcher he is. He can line up on the outside and run routes and make catches against another team's number one corner. He's just incredibly, incredibly impressive. He did fumble, whatever. Everybody fumbled today. As I said, the conditions were awful. He's honestly unbelievable. I call him Le'Veon Bell West because they're really the same player. They just play on different teams on different coasts. But he's a gem. There aren't running backs are typically fungible, but there are some that are irreplaceable. He would be one of them.
Interesting. Well, great stuff as always. Thanks a lot, Andy.
Later, dude. See you Thursday.
We now move to the Minnesota Vikings 25-16 win over the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm here, as always, with our Jaguar superfan, Ryan. And Ryan, some of these streaks just were broken. There's some new things we saw in this game. Blake Bortles did not throw a pick six. What's going on?
Oh, Nick, what's up? Just couldn't be happier. Going through another Sunday. We're now 11-2, right? That's how that works?
Yeah,
Is that where
in a mirror, that's what it
Oh,
looked
yeah,
like.
oh, yeah. Wait. Sorry, I'm standing in front of a mirror. Hold on. Oh, no. Oh, no. We lost again. Yeah, I was gonna do the game with you where I was gonna say, hey, Nick, tell me what happened this game and see what you would guess, and then surprise you by Blake Bortles not throwing an interception. But hey, you already covered it. similarly, though, another fourth quarter game, but this time a 2-point game. We've been in a lot of one score games, but 2-point really close, and still in the end we don't get it done, and it turns into a 9-point game somehow, and that's the final there. What do you want? You want the good news, some bad news? Tell me where you want to go with this. Let's have fun, just like every week.
Yeah, well, I want to, you know, throw out there that, as you've been saying for several weeks now, Marquise Lee is starting to look better and better, weirdly better than the Allens, and he had yet another very good game.
Yeah, it's true. I remember one play in particular. He caught a first down over the middle, and it was a 10-yard play, and that was good enough for the first down. But he made a move, made one guy miss, made another guy miss. And really nice moves after the catch. Made a nice catch on the sideline. He really is. He's like the bright spot, as you said. I've been talking about him for weeks because that'll latch onto something, and it's still strange that he looks better than Allen Robinson. Hearns was out today. He's been hurt, but he hasn't been that good this year. But yep, the albino tiger, Marquise Lee, doing some things.
Well, that's always good. You also had, I don't know if this is, you know, whenever you see a safety featured prominently in the stats sheet, that's not always a good thing, but Jonathan Cyprian ended up with 14 total tackles, and he knocked down a pass as well. And Pozelesny is still Pozelesny, so hey.
Well, here's your weird fact of the day that no one would guess. Guess what jersey I'm wearing right now and typically do on many Sundays.
Cyprian?
Jonathan Cyprian, that's right, because I took a wild guess when he was drafted, and, you know, it was like, I think it was 2013. That was for the rebuild, and I was like, hey, I've heard good things about the safety. Let me get this guy's jersey and just see how things go, because our jerseys were also a new style. Chose him. Really bad choice. But hey, they're expensive, so I haven't gotten another one. So I root for that guy. Nice seeing he had tackles, but he makes a lot of mistakes. I don't even know if he'll be on the team going forward. But hey, good for him. Wearing that number 37 that nobody knows right now. My boy, Sip.
Well, and so looking at the Vikings side of this, they got a tough road to make it into the postseason. But, you know, what did you see on their side?
Well, this is weird because every team that's won against the Jaguars in the last, like, 7 weeks or 7 or 8 or whatever we've lost, really, like, the last 5, I want to say. I don't know. I'm sure anyone nationally or anyone that's a fan of the opposing team is like, okay, we won against the Jaguars, big deal. But this is several weeks in a row that the defense has played well and keeping teams down for the most part, and just holding teams down. You just don't get anything from the Jaguars offense. So I've just been wondering, just again, with all the opponents, like, I think it should count in people's minds as not a good win, but don't just say like it's going to be an easy victory. I don't know, even though I don't expect the Jaguars to win, again, the defense has just been playing well. So the Vikings, here's the thing. I mean, their running game is still just bad. And they had a couple plays today, but really it's Sam Bradford and I don't know. I feel like their offense doesn't have enough. Their defense played pretty well. Opponent, I don't know what to say with the Jags, but for me personally, I wouldn't think the Vikings can do any damage in the postseason, and I'm not sure if they'll get there, but they have a shot with playing their kind of game, which is defense, and just score barely enough to beat the other team. And I like Mike Zimmer a lot. They're going to be okay. I know I gave a lot of thoughts there, but I'm not completely confident in the Vikings.
All right, fair enough. And in terms of the Jaguars, is it now look like an absolute certainty that front office gets blown up?
It's so weird because I don't know if I'm just blind or whatever, but I do like our GM, Dave Caldwell, and I feel like he's made good choices. You just don't see any results on the field, so I don't know if it's coaching. But I won't be surprised whoever's gone, head coach or anyone in the front office. The one note I'll say today, which is just strange, that Gus Bradley's defense is kind of showing up in, like, his worst
season. But we had a goal line stand. So it was like fourth and one at the goal line for the Vikings. They didn't get in. And the Vikings, we forced a fumble at another goal line stand on like a third and one, and the Jags recovered it. So defense is doing things. So maybe that keeps Dave Caldwell, keeps his job. I wouldn't be opposed to keeping him, but I won't be surprised whatever changes Shad Khan makes.
And what about your quarterback? Is there any chance this guy can still be developed?
I hope so. It's so strange to see. Here's the comparison I've heard maybe once or twice. I don't know if it's been said on this podcast, though, so I'll bring it up. Is the name Josh Freeman ring a bell? Like, mm-hmm. he looks so promising and then just fell off a cliff. And I'm just worried that that's what Bortles is. I don't know what else they can really do, and it just makes me ever since we drafted him and before the draft, I was just like, I don't want another Blaine Gabbert, basically. And he's played better than Gabbert and has franchise records in a season and whatever. But the point is, I remember in the last season or so of Gabbert, is I wanted Gabbert to be starting because it meant we had somebody promising. And so I want Bortles to be starting next year because it gives us more promise than if we got some kind of free agent guy who's just a stopgap. If he can work on his mechanics all off season again, it's a 50-50 proposition at best, and I would guess a lot of people think Bortles can't do it. So we shall see.
Indeed. And we shall speak again.
Yes.
And once again, it's going to be bright and shiny news on the Jaguars next week with me and you.
Oh, just praise for Jaguars fans all across this great nation. So many of us.
Yep. The loud and the proud. All right. Thanks a lot, Ryan.
Yep. Weekly Jaguars talk. Everybody loves it. Thank you, Nick.
And next up is the Washington Redskins and their 27-22 win over the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm here with both of our superfans, including a Philadelphia Eagles superfan, James, who wanted to lose by more, I guess, and Neil, our Redskins superfan, who's surprised they won it all, it seems. So we'll start with you, Neil, just to toss it to the victor first, I suppose. How do you feel about this win?
Obviously, a win's a win, Nick, and you'll take a win in the NFL on the road whenever you can get it. But I was disappointed with Washington tonight. I thought the offense looked out of sorts for most of the game, and if it wasn't for Deshaun Jackson, I think we would have lost this game. Not impressed at all. I'm happy with the win, of course, but it certainly it didn't set me up for the next few weeks thinking, yeah, we can go on a run now and win some games.
All right, and how about you, James? As I mentioned, you were expecting this to be more of a blowout, or hoping anyway. How were you disappointed?
I don't even like being jerked around like this by my squad. I mean, you could say that the first two field goals probably should have been touchdowns, whatever. You could say the last drive probably should have resulted in touchdown, but at the end of the day, we lost. There was no effort by the defense, giving up four touchdowns. Three of over 20 yards, two of them on runs, and there's still no passion in this team overall. The offense at times looks lethargic. It was a 2-to-1 ratio as far as pass to run. There were 46 pass attempts, only 25 runs. And, no one could do anything to sustain anything worth being happy about. Time of possession was clearly in favor of Philadelphia, but they can't stop big plays to save their lives. I mean, Deshaun Jackson got free on an 80-yard go route. How does that happen?
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that you guys ran significantly more plays than Washington did, and seemed to have all of the opportunities. What is just not working that was working before?
Big plays. The secondary is horrendous, and I mentioned this with Neil in our Superfan battle before the game last week. And the secondary, it was something that I was basically poking holes at in the first three games of the season, even though we won. But when you constantly give up 50-yard plays downfield to wide receivers and no one knows where the ball is on defense, you're either committing pass interference or you're giving up long scores. And today they gave up long scores, long completions. That's how Washington was able to stay in this game. They didn't have the ball much, but when they did, they took advantage of big plays. Anything over 20 yards, we were just giving it to them left and right.
Well, and do you feel, Neil, that like you guys do have that sort of steady success usually? I mean, this has been an offense that has put up quite a bit of production this year, but it seems like the issue this week was Washington's inability to sustain those drives.
Yeah, that was a big difference, Nick. In previous weeks, we've dinked and dunked our way down the field, spreading the ball far and wide across, you know, maybe 10 receivers sometimes, and just picking away on the running game and getting long drives. But tonight, like James said, it was big plays. We had 2 20-yard plus touchdown runs. I don't think we've done that since about 1873. And in terms of DeSean Jackson, yeah, 80-yard touchdown run with another big play to Jackson, which was just over 20 yards, and another 33-yard pass play to Crowder. So yeah, big chunks just when we needed them and scraped the win. But it was, James mentioned the 2 field goals for Philadelphia to open the game, and I thought especially the second one, the 36-yard field goal, I thought that one probably should have gone for a touchdown. You probably needed at least 1 touchdown out of those 2.
And so, James, knowing this is a new staff and you have a lot of young pieces on this team, what are some of the things that you definitely want to see added or taken away from the squad that you have currently?
I want every single cornerback fired. These guys can't cover the phone book in a phone booth. I mean, they're getting turned inside out. They're giving it way too much cushion. I mean, I can understand DeSean Jackson, but Leodis McKelvin got overexcited on his pick 6 and then pretty much then started locking down. I mean, if you want to call it locking down, he got more physical with Pierre Garçon, but it took that pick 6 just to even get him motivated to do anything in the game. Up until that point, he was 5 yards away from Garçon in every single pass attempt, and it's like, where are you? These corners give more space to wide receivers and supposed man coverage than anything I've seen in my life, and it's atrocious. I mean, if this is man coverage, this sucks.
And for you, Neil, you know, you said that you're a little bit worried that this team might not be ready for for the big show in terms of the postseason. It would seem they also would need a little bit of help getting in. I don't know. I guess how confident are you that this team does make it to the postseason in 2 consecutive years?
Yeah. It looks like it's going to be between us, Tampa Bay, and Minnesota. I think we can, if we play well enough, we can win 3 out of our last 4. I think we'll probably lose to Carolina next Monday night. But our last 2 games after that, we can win them against the Bears and the Giants. That would give us, 9 wins if we won 2 of those last 3. That might sneak us in, just about. But it may also may not. Tampa Bay, they're winning again tonight, so they're keeping the pressure up. 50-50 at the moment, Nick. I would just like to say one thing about Cousins tonight. He goes through the pick 6, which he did, I think, in the first game as well. He threw a pick 6 against Philadelphia. And one of the things we notice about Kirk Cousins this season is that once he's done that, previous years, he would have just crumbled and thrown maybe another couple of interceptions and just had a terrible rest of the game. But this year, he does that occasionally, as all quarterbacks do. And he came back and had 2 good touchdown drives after that. So he's showing that development and showed it again tonight. That was good. Pleased about that. But we sneaked a win here tonight. Very, very lucky tonight.
Well, and with the final word on Washington's QB development, final thoughts for you, James, on Carson Wentz. He had he still had a decent game at 32 of 46 for 314, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. How did you feel he acquitted himself in this one?
Sometimes I feel like he's regressing. When he's flush out of the pocket and runs towards the sideline, it's good to keep your eyes downfield. But running out of bounds 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage and giving the defensive sack is not smart. He's got to learn to throw the ball away. He did that, I think, 2 times today. He's done it at least once in every single game that we've lost in this 4-game losing streak currently. And his awareness is not there. Now, granted, I get it. He doesn't have the weapons on the outside to consistently take advantage of the DBs and go downfield. Yeah, Zach Ertz had a great game, but Wentz still has holes in his game that need to be picked up. And I get it. He's a rookie, but this is week 13, 14, and that simple thing of rolling out the pocket and just throwing the ball away instead of trying to force something to happen, he needs to fix that. And I would love to see that done before the season's over with, if not before the end of the start of next season.
All right.
He's not being helped by that offensive. He's not being helped by that offensive line, though, James. That's that right tackle position, especially poor tonight.
What offensive line? what offensive line?
Exactly. Yeah.
What? There's an offensive line out there. I mean, between three backups, a center who started a fight, and left tackle who loves the false start all the time. I mean, I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Yeah, all that right. sums it up.
Well, I look forward to hearing, hopefully, hopefully a happier O-line review next week. But anyways, thanks a lot, guys.
Cheers. Have a good evening, guys. See you later.
We now move to the Carolina Panthers' 28-16 win over the San Diego Chargers in Carolina. I'm here with our Chargers superfan who can't be happy having seen a couple more of his key guys go down and this looking more and more like a lost season where probably, Ken, you just want to see this team get away with this with no more injuries.
Yeah, I'm pretty much over rooting for wins at this point. I just hope that at the end of the play there isn't a Charger player on the field, especially considering we lost two of our better players who are even left, Melvin Gordon and Joey Bosa today. Bosa with a concussion and Melvin Gordon with a hip injury, and then Craig Mager also went down. So the injury-filled season continues, and at this point, I've seen all I've needed to see with this team for the rest of the season. I'm almost tempted to not even watch the games anymore because it's just too hard to watch, and Rivers is frustrated and throws picks all over the place. He has no one to throw to. He doesn't have any time. The defense is decent, but there's too many injuries for them to do anything at this point. And I've pretty much had it with Mike McCoy and the training staff because this is ridiculous. It's 2 years in a row.
I mean, it would just seem to be just too much bad luck to be possible. I mean, is it possible that some of these guys are just injury prone? I mean, I don't know. The fact that it's even happening to new players would seem to indicate that this has got to be something with the training staff.
It has to be. I don't understand why there hasn't been wholesale changes to that training staff. I mean, at what point is it not bad luck anymore? Because last season, you know, I could point to that and say bad luck, but two seasons in a row? Come on, man.
Well, and I guess from the Carolina side of things, you guys now have the same record, and I'm sure Carolina fans are feeling, like they're at a similarly futile point of the season, but what did you see on their side of the ball?
I didn't even think they played very well. Their offensive line isn't that great. They saw constant pressure all day, but Newton is obviously mobile enough to avoid it. Defensive side of the ball, Rivers kind of threw it away to them, and so I wouldn't say that they were all that great, but, you know, they have a great defensive line, and Newton's really special. I think Jonathan Stewart's pretty good, too. I didn't really see anything impressive from their wide receivers. They're a mediocre team. I think their record says what they are. But next year, you know, if they can fill some of those holes, I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with once again.
Well, as you mentioned, Phillip Rivers finished 21 of 39 for 236 yards, two touchdowns, three interceptions. And while the receiving corps has been, you know, really hit with some injuries, nonetheless, you have some of these guys that I think people continue to be high on. Of course, Antonio Gates is still the immortal Antonio Gates, but you also have Dontrell Inman had six catches for 71 yards and a touchdown. Tyrell Williams still had a couple of long ones. But, I mean, are these guys, I guess, have you seen enough from them to say that, like, guys like Inman and Williams can be decent replacements and can you know, vie for starting jobs, or do you think they've now put out enough tape to show that they're not answers?
Oh, no, I actually really like Inman and Tyrell Williams. And I think the reason
you know, that Rivers is playing so poorly this time is he's just trying to do too much. He's trying to win the game by himself, and he can't do that. The best version of Philip Rivers is the dink and dunk, take what the defense gives you type of guy, and he's just not doing that this year. But Inman and Williams, had the season gone according to plan, they would have been the third and the fourth receivers. So I think they're really, really good. If Dontrell Inman and Tyrell Williams are your third and fourth receivers, you have a really good receiving core. But when you have Keenan Allen go down, when you have Stevie Williams go down before the season even starts, when Antonio Gates has lost so many steps, he's a shell of what he used to be. It's not looking good. But, you know, if the guys who got injured come back and Hunter Henry continues to make a few steps forward, the Chargers offense is going to be good, especially with Melvin Gordon if he can return from injury. The offensive line is still suspect, but I really like Inman.
All right. And any preferred candidates for that, what you hope is a coaching vacancy in San Diego there?
No, I have no idea. I haven't really thought of it until just this week. Last season I was like, blamed everything on injuries. This season I just want McCoy gone. I just want to change the scenery. Today they didn't have any decent effort, you know. The only guy I like on the coaching staff is John Pagano. I wouldn't mind if he became the head coach, actually.
Interesting. Well, that'll give us something to continue to pay attention to and watch. Thanks a lot, Ken. Sorry it wasn't more to be happy about today.
Hey, our draft pick improved, so I'm happy.
Hey, there's that. And next up is the New York Jets and their 23-17 win over the San Francisco 49ers, dropping them in the draft order. I am here with our Jets superfan, Andrew. And so, Andrew, how do you feel about losing that spot on the top five in the draft?
I really appreciate you starting there, Nick. Because, yes, that was what I was thinking the entire game. But it is hard for me to be upset. Of course, I would have rather them lose. Be truthful, like I would have been okay with the Jets coming back and then just like the old fake comeback, you know, just come back and then lose an OT. But the way that it was looking was at 14-0 and with San Francisco driving to go up 17-0, it looked like it really like I've been on Todd Bowles' side this whole year in terms of like, I don't think he's done a good job at all, but I also don't understand the people calling for his head either. Like, have you learned nothing in the past God knows how many years? With the Jets, you can't, like, you need some type of stability. You need to try and build something, and just switching the coach every year is not gonna bring you success. I mean, we've tried it and it doesn't work. They need to stick with the same regime and have them build something. And The Jets do have some good young players, specifically at receiver, that I've been saying all year. Robbie Anderson had a good game today. But the story is Bryce Petty, and he started off the game with one of the worst interceptions you will ever see on a little hitch route, like 2 yards down the field, which was the throw was wider than it was vertical. Like he threw it, it went 2 yards down the field, but it went 5 yards towards the sideline. And Jimmy Ward just read it and jumped it and took it to the 4-yard line, and Carlos Hyde took it in for the touchdown. But after that, Petty settled down, and he made it, especially on the game tying. No, it was the game winning drive actually in overtime on Robbie Anderson, and he has tools that a good quarterback should show, which is arm strength and mobility, but. Again, he still has trouble reading defenses. He has trouble feeling the pressure in the pocket. A lot of things that young quarterbacks have trouble doing. And this game just makes me more with Bowles' decision not to start him a couple of weeks ago. Because I don't think 4 games are going to completely grasp what this guy is capable of. Maybe 6 or 7 would have given you a better glimpse of what you might have. But 4 games, it puts the option of Petty fooling you. The guy, and I could choose him yes or no. I'll go no, but at least we now know that he does have some tools. And yes, it was against the worst defense in football, so I think that's worth mentioning. But it's a nice win for the Jets, and it's also about time the Jets realize that Bilal Powell is their best running back. I've been saying it since the offseason, and they need a Matt Forte injury for it to happen. And then Bilal Powell was the player of this game for the Jets. And he's probably the reason they won the game.
Yeah, you mentioned Powell. He had 29 carries for 145 yards, which is averaging 5 per carry, 2 touchdowns. And just since you were talking about Petty, you know, outside of that interception, as you said, he was efficient and solid. He was 23 of 35 for 257 yards, and that's 7.3 per attempt, which means he wasn't just checking it down. It wasn't all just screens. I mean, he was pushing it a little bit.
Exactly. And that's something that Fitzpatrick doesn't give you. And that's arm strength, arm talent, like not having to load up for every single pass and letting a corner is kind of ironic because that's what happened with Petty today. But the fact that he's not constantly looking for a check down every play does give him some encouragement and shows that he has balls and he's willing to throw the ball down the field. But I think we should also talk about the 49er side of this. Carlos Hyde was the best player on the field today for both teams. He had 200 total yards, a receiving touchdown. At one point, he was at carry for 126 yards. He ripped up the Jets' rush defense, which is supposed to be this team's strength. So that's maybe a little positive from the 49ers side. And also, they had their season high in sacks, with, I believe, 6. DeForest Buckner, their rookie first-round pick out of Oregon, had 2 of those. But yeah, they blew a 14-0 lead, and Phil Dawson missed 2 first-half field goals, which would have iced the game. And the Jets came back and won the game, but as you said, screwed up their draft position. I don't think this win in particular drops them. I think maybe it might drop them 1 spot to 4-5, which I don't think is a big deal. But now that the Jets face the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Patriots next 3 games, like, they're not going to come out flat in those division games. I think one of those games will give them 5 wins, and that will probably drop them and put them at the 9th pick. And then again, maybe they'll miss out on the top quarterback, even though right now no one really knows who the top quarterback is. Right now I'd probably lean towards Mitch Trubisky, the guy from North Carolina, who's a big, strong guy with a big arm and is a good athlete. I think he's going to wind up rising. But there are other guys like Deshaun Kizer, Deshaun Watson, who people aren't 100% sure about yet and might slip to the middle of the first round. So the Jets will still have options at the quarterback position. It's just a matter of if they're going to be willing to invest such a high pick in a year where quarterbacks aren't sure things. But that's a long way from now. I'm just going to continue being conflicted about this win. And I think we've spoken way too much about this game anyway. So we'll go on to the next game.
Well, just one more thing, and that, you know, do you think that the 1-12 San Francisco 49ers are also going to be in the market for one of those top quarterbacks in the draft? And should they?
Well, if they believe that one of the quarterbacks are franchise worthy, then absolutely. I mean, I don't think anyone would disagree with that. It's just a matter of if they think he's the guy. And also, you have to wonder who's going to be there as the GM, as the head coach. They want to bring in their own guy. Again, I think it's going to be a Trubisky thing, but the way Cleveland is looking, it doesn't look like anyone's going to have a shot at Trubisky because Trubisky's actually from Cleveland, from Ohio. I think it's somewhere around Cleveland. And there are a lot of whispers that they already really like him and they're going to take him first overall. So after that, I think San Francisco's got to go with like Myles Garrett at that point, but who knows? It's very early, but yes, they should be one of many teams looking for quarterbacks early in the draft.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, Nick.
And next up is the most competitive game of the week. It is the Atlanta Falcons trouncing the Los Angeles Rams 42-14. I'm here once again with our Jets superfan, Andrew, from the back of an Uber to break this one down because he was watching it. And tell us just how back and forth this one was.
I mean, this game, it's kind of cliche to say this a lot, like when a very good team faces a bad team. And like the game was over after the opening kickoff, but literally this game was over after the opening kickoff because Michael Thomas, not the Saints Michael Thomas, the Rams Michael Thomas, muffed the opening kick, and the Falcons recovered the 3-yard line and then proceeded to score right then and there, and the game was over. Now that's the analysis. Like the Rams are not a team built to come back from behind, and after the first play of the game, the game is over. And I don't want to put it all on Michael Thomas, obviously not, because there are many other issues with the Rams. Jared Goff hey, it's good. Two defensive touchdowns for Atlanta, a Vic Beasley sack fumble. Vic Beasley was one of the best defensive players in the league this week. Three sacks, a forced fumble, and a recovery for a touchdown. And then I believe Deion Jones had a pick six. But Julio Jones didn't even play in this game, and he didn't need to. And it's kind of like two wins in one for Atlanta because they were able to rest their best player, and they were able to get touches for all the other players, whether it be Taylor Gabriel, Aldrick Robinson, or their tight ends, Tololo and Hooper, and obviously Tevin Coleman. Devontae Freeman had six carries for 6 yards. So, like, the Falcons themselves knew this game was over after the opening kickoff. It seemed like the only person that didn't know was Jeff Fisher. And that the Rams are a complete mess. And this is coming from a Jets fan. And I don't see any way he comes back. Yes, he got that extension, but Stan Kroenke's made of money. And it wouldn't surprise me if they hire a big-time coach next this upcoming offseason because it's just not working.
Yeah, no, I mean, but that's why it's just so insane. I mean, how do you extend a guy and then fire him 3 weeks later?
I mean, from all indications, the extension occurred before the season started. It just wasn't leaked until now. And that kind of makes sense because they wanted to give Fisher more security. But he's just not a good coach. And maybe he once was, but the league has passed him by. And it's hard for me to imagine a team in a big market like Los Angeles continuing to go with Jeff Fisher, especially if the Chargers move to LA next year. The Chargers are now 5-8, but they're sneakily have one of the best foundations of any team in football. I know this is going on a weird tangent right now, but they got Rivers. They got hopefully a healthy Keenan Allen with Tyrell Williams, Hunter Henry. You still got Antonio Gates. You got Melvin Gordon, who's one of the better running backs in the league. Hopefully he's okay after the injury. And then they have two great pass rushers in Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. And their corners, when healthy, Jason Verrett, Casey Hayward, and Brandon Flowers are one of the best trios in the league. So if I'm an LA fan, why am I rooting for the Rams? I'm rooting for the Chargers next year. So it's hard for me to imagine that Rams regime coming back after the debacle this year has been.
Yeah. That's all great points. Just to throw it back to the team that actually is going to do something this year. Vic Beasley, as you mentioned, he is now tied with Von Miller for the sack lead. For me, I was a lot more confident in this Falcons team being a real, a real noisemaker in the playoffs before the Chiefs seemed to really be able to, run up and down on them. It was actually mostly passing through the air, but still, I mean, the Chiefs offense, which hasn't been explosive all year, had its first really explosive game against them. Do you think that there's enough stuff on this defense that they can really compete in the playoffs?
So the Desmond Trufant injury, I mean, you could just ask Tim. I guess that's why I'm covering this game, because Tim is still mourning Desmond Trufant's injury and torn pec, I believe it was.
Well, that one, he's on a plane, but yes.
But if I had to choose between Tampa and Atlanta, who I think is who's going to be a tougher out in the playoffs, I would probably still go with Atlanta as a tougher out, even though Tampa's defense has really, really impressed me over the past couple of weeks, just because it's hard for me to imagine a one-man offense with Mike Evans being able to beat a playoff defense. And while Atlanta's offense is one of the most multifaceted offenses in the league, and yes, their defense has not been good and their secondary is a problem, but they can make plays on defense here and there, as we saw today against obviously Jared Goff, but they do have playmakers on that side of the ball, while Tampa has one of the worst offensive lines in football, and they have one weapon that you're afraid of in Mike Evans. It's tough to me to see Tampa being a harder out than Atlanta, but would it shock me if Tampa makes the playoffs over Atlanta? Not at all. Not at all. The way Tampa is playing, I can't doubt them. The teams they're beating, obviously they beat Denver, right? They beat Seattle and they beat KC, and then they beat New Orleans today and held Drew Brees to one of the worst games of his career. So Atlanta, I mean, it's kind of sucks because it's going to be the same storyline as last year where they came out firing and then they ended up choking and not making the playoffs. They very well can go 10-6 and not make the playoffs. So it's kind of a raw deal for the Falcons, but that's the way the NFC is this year. Maybe, who knows, maybe the Giants choke and they both make it, which will make me happy. So that's what I'm rooting for. I just decided.
All right. Lots to continue to watch there. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, Nick.
We now move to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 16-11 win in a sloppy, rainy game against the New Orleans Saints. I'm here with our Saints superfan, Chris. And Chris, it seems like this sloppy game was the final straw for the Saints' playoff hopes.
Well, Nick, I've been saying for weeks, this team didn't have a shot at the playoffs. They didn't belong in the playoffs, frankly. The sad part is today it seemed like their defense finally pulled together. And it was the offense, second week in a row, that laid an egg. Breeze more than any of them.
Right, which is very strange. Breeze ended up going 25 of 41 for 257 yards, but with zero touchdowns and three interceptions. Despite the fact that those, like most of those picks were pretty bad, his wide receivers were really not helping him out today. I think, was there something like three dropped touchdowns in this?
Well, there's two dropped touchdowns, and then Breeze overthrew a wide-open Cooks on a post route.
Yeah, so either way, clearly some opportunities missed. But with three games left to play here, what are you going to be looking for as a Saints fan out of this team?
Well, I mean, you've reached the point of time where you hope to see some positive tape out of the young guys. Fairley is playing for a contract. You have Rankins is playing very well. So hopefully we can get Fairley locked up. And I'd try to do it within the next 3 weeks. And then Stephon Anthony, who was our first-round pick last year, starting middle linebacker, we moved him to outside today, or this season. It was a total bust. Today, he played middle linebacker today with mixed reviews. I'd like to see him back in the middle. We need to try to find a way to get something out of him. Craig Robinson is hurt, so it's a perfect opportunity. And what's the word? The season is lost, so we need to try to get something back on that investment of a first-rounder.
I mean, it does seem like a lot of your recent first-rounders are stepping up. I mean, Von Bell as well. I guess he wasn't first-rounder, but I mean, he's a young guy who seemed to put out some good tape there.
Well, this rookie class has been really, really good. And ever since Jeff Ireland came over and kind of took over the drafts about 2 years back, you know, we've gotten a lot of Andres Pete this year. And I've not been the biggest fan of that pick since day one, but I'll eat crow there. But you're right, this year, you know, Von Bell and Mike Thomas have played really, really well. Sheldon Rankins, even Anyamata, who got a couple big plays today. We drafted him in a fifth round out of Canada. So the Saints are turning their draft woes around. Now we just need to start filling the rest of those holes and start winning some games again.
And on the Tampa Bay side, they improved to 8-5. And are certainly knocking on the door of the playoffs. What did you see from them?
They have a really strong front seven. The secondary suspect, but they're starting to kind of gel. But, you know, Noah Spence, I was really high on him in the draft process. I know he's somebody the Saints spent a lot of time looking at, and the Bucs kind of snuck up ahead of him and got him. He's playing well. Golson's playing well. And McCoy's a stud. And Robert Ayers kind of found a second life in the NFL here. He's having a resurgence in his 30s. So the front seven, the front four specifically, is getting pressure on quarterbacks and allowing them to drop seven in coverage. And, you know, it worked against the Saints this week, and it's been working for them the last couple weeks.
And so what is going on with Breeze? Is he just trying to do too much on a team that just can't get enough going?
It's pressure up the middle. This has been his Achilles heel his entire career. If you can get pressure with your front four and get pressure in his face, drop seven, he will do this. It happened last week with Detroit. It's happening. You have to get here today. Not having Max Unger, I'm sure, hurt the offensive line, but it's not an excuse. You know, this was a defensive line that outplayed the offensive line, and Breeze, he can get happy feet. When he gets happy feet, he tends to stare down receivers, and his mechanics are gone. And with his limitations with arm strength and height, he needs to have the proper footwork. And 99.9% of the time, it's perfect. And that's why he has the stats that he does. But, you know, this is it. This is how you beat him. And the last 2 weeks, we've had to see it.
All right. Well, thanks again. It was great stuff. Appreciate you joining as always, Chris.
Hey, take care, Nick.
Cheers.
Hello, everyone. This is Kevin, the Dallas Cowboys super fan. And I'm joined tonight with Sam, the Giants super fan, who's definitely in a better mood than me. Sam, how are you doing after that just very eventful 10-7 thriller by the Giants over my Dallas Cowboys?
You know, I think it was there were 17 punts, and it was really a boring game, but I guess that's how these Giants are going to have to win. Making it ugly, hoping they'll get some enough big plays and this defense can hold on. How is it watching the game for you?
I mean, it was frustrating as can be. I mean, it's really the first time the Cowboys have struggled like that on offense, and now that's really two consecutive games. We sort of struggled against Minnesota last week, only mustered 17 points, and obviously today we only came away with one touchdown, 7 points. So our offense needs to get back on track, and they need to get back on track in a hurry. Not the right time of the season to sort of lose stride. But the offensive line, from what I saw, they were pass protecting decently well. I mean, the Giants were bringing pressure. They didn't want Dak to get comfortable, and he wasn't comfortable all night. I think he went 17 of 37 or something like that. So that's not good. Threw two picks. Dez Bryant was a costly fumble. But Ezekiel Elliott had a good game. I think he averaged pretty much 5 yards a carry, went over 100 yards. The Cowboys just couldn't do anything on offense. And aside from Odell Beckham basically just creating a 10-yard play and making it into a 70-yard play, which most players would not, let's say, that was the difference in the game. And really, it was a defensive battle. Did not see it coming, as I predicted the 31-27 win, and I think you predicted the 31-24 win. So this was the last thing I was expecting to watch this Sunday evening. So I'm very disappointed, to be honest with you. Was scrolling through Twitter at the end of the game. Of course, hear some rumblings that the Cowboys offense would be better with Romo. I mean, I always think that, but that's just can't put him in at this point. Any thoughts, other thoughts you have on this game for the Giants? I mean, it was a huge win for them. They couldn't lose this game. Yeah. And although it was an ugly game, it was a massive win for them.
Yeah, Redskins lost. Now Giants go up two games on the wild card. I think this defense showed up to play without Jason Pierre-Paul. Controlling the line, they gave up a couple. It seemed like every drive they gave up one 13- or 14-yard carry to Ezekiel and then kind of slowed everybody else down. It was a great performance. Norris Jenkins really bottled up Dez all game. Linebackers made tackles. Landon Collins made tackles. Jason Witten almost did nothing. I think Landon Collins single-handedly erased him from the game. And, yeah, Odell Beckham, I mean, there's not much you can say on him. He's incredibly fast. You can't give him any space. And he'll take advantage. He dropped the touchdown earlier in the game. He dropped the first down in the red zone. So he didn't even have a great game, but yet he's still the only offense the Giants can muster. And I was hoping that with Shane Vereen back, we might see, you know, this offense pick up a little steam. It just didn't happen. So here on in, we're hoping to win ugly games with our defense and Odell Beckham, because as you saw, there's not really much else.
I don't know the Giants. What are the last three games looking like, and what are you predicting the Giants finish out? Because like from what I saw, the Giants offense, like if it wasn't for Odell Beckham, you could arguably say the Giants offense was worse than the Cowboys offense today. I mean, Eli Manning looked awful. I mean, I thought he was going to do pretty well against us today. He threw two picks, I believe. He could have thrown three or four. We dropped a few. He just looked lost out there. And that offense, I've never seen it look so out of sync. And it was just so surprising for me. Like the Giants, oh, man, don't see them.
Yeah.
You just can't win that many games like that. And it's just sort of becoming like every week thing for the Giants now on offense.
Yeah, we have the Redskins, Eagles, and Lions. I think we need to win one of them to make the playoffs. I think we'll do that. I think we'll end up winning two of those. They end up 11-5. You know, I mean, the offense does have skilled players. It's just that offensive line is crap. Eli's not at his best. So
we'll see what happens. Oh, my.
Yeah, he's a waste of space out there. I think we may have to take a look at him, and it's bad. We'll see what happens. I mean, I think the Cowboys still win the division, still end up with the first place in the NFC. I think they built themselves a lead, but it can't be good for Cowboys now that the Giants have beat them twice.
I mean, I think the Cowboys clearly are going to win the division. They just need to win one more game out of these next three, and I think they most certainly will do that. Just a little disheartening to see our offense sort of look like what it's looked like the last 2 weeks, finishing out the latter half of December going into January. It's not exactly what you want to see. I mean, Dak looked awful tonight. Let's just put it bluntly. He did not look good. He threw multiple picks. He could have also been more. I mean, he looked really bad. By far his worst game of the season. I mean, there's not much else to say about that. I mean, Romo is probably smiling a little bit on the inside. So that's, besides the Giants, Romo quietly is the happiest person in the building, because Jerry Jones, the man he is, he's always, his mind's always thinking, because he's crazy like that. So he's like, oh my God, what should I do now? That's just what I'm saying. I know Jerry like that. So any last words you want to say before we close this up? I can't be awake much longer after witnessing that horrible game.
No, that was a tough game to stay up through. I'm glad we both made it. I think this game meant more for the Giants than it did for the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys set themselves up pretty well. I think the Giants needed this win. I'm happy we got it, and see what happens these last 3 weeks.
Yeah, I also think the snow definitely helped you out. The Cowboys didn't really want to be out. I mean, they did want to be out there, but made it more fun, less fun to be out there for sure, I would imagine.
Yeah. This Giants defense is nasty, and hopefully we see more of it going forward.
No, it is. Give them credit. They bottled up Dez and Dak today. They did nothing, absolutely nothing. So give the Giants credit here. Cowboys swept by the Giants for the first time since 2011. It's painful for me to see, but got to face the facts here. Dropped to 0-2 against the Giants, 11-0 versus everyone else. Sad on the inside, but overall, I'll take the 11-2. Sam, I'll talk to you later.
All right, have a great night. Speak to you.
Take care.
And that does it for another action-packed week in the NFL. We had teams falling out of the playoff hunt and teams that have found new life in their own postseason ambitions. And we got to hear the joy and sorrow from fans on both sides of that. Once again, if you want to get in contact with us directly, go ahead and email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts, and definitely also write a review on iTunes and rate us. That's where you can find all of our archives. You can find all of our past shows. You can also find those past shows on blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. And we're always also engaging with fans on Twitter at @NFUpodcast. There you'll find a lot of discussion, polls, you name it. And also, you know, go ahead and give some love to our sponsors. You know, we are really helped out by them. We want to show them some love too. So BetDSI, if you're into sports at all, I'm sure you're going to find something you'll find interesting there. There's tons to do, tons of you know, little wagers you can put on things that I bet you'd never even thought about, but probably have a bit of an idea, you know. And that's all it takes. So once you've done all those things, you too are a super fan. But you know who's not super? This guy, who apparently got extended for no apparent reason. You've learned all the ways to get in touch with us. This guy has learned nothing.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is 4 quarters long.
Well, you could just cut it right after that and have me talk, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So 3, 2.